University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination, Session 2008. English as a Second Language. Paper 3. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Which is the best place for the visitor to send an email?
Excuse me, do you know of anywhere I can send an email, please?
Well, there is an internet cafe, but it's a bus ride away in the centre of town, and you have to pay a fee for the computer use. I know, go to the library. There's free internet access there. You get a 20-minute slot at no cost at all, and it's just around the corner. And it's open now.
Excuse me, do you know of anywhere I can send an email, please?
Well, there is an internet cafe, but it's a bus ride away in the centre of town, and you have to pay a fee for the computer use. I know, go to the library. There's free internet access there. You get a 20-minute slot at no cost at all, and it's just around the corner. And it's open now.
Question 2. Where do the friends decide to swim, and why?
Let's have a swim outside, then have a barbecue or a picnic afterwards.
OK, that's a good idea. Shall we go to the beach or to the outside pool?
The beach will be nice, but it will be full of people, and there's a strong wind blowing, so it will probably be too rough to swim.
The pool, then. But those chemicals in the water make my eyes so red, and it shuts at 5 o'clock.
I know. Let's wait until later in the day. Then the wind will drop and we can go to the beach, swim and have a barbecue. Let's have a swim outside, then have a barbecue or a picnic afterwards.
OK, that's a good idea. Shall we go to the beach or to the outside pool?
The beach will be nice, but it will be full of people, and there's a strong wind blowing, so it will probably be too rough to swim.
The pool, then. But those chemicals in the water make my eyes so red, and it shuts at 5 o'clock.
I know. Let's wait until later in the day. Then the wind will drop, and we can go to the beach, swim and have a barbecue.
Question 3. Which 3 details does the website give the visitor?
I found a wonderful train timetable website. You type in your starting point, destination and times, and it gives you all the train connections, the platform numbers, and even the cost of the journey. I found a wonderful train timetable website. You type in your starting point, destination and times, and it gives you all the train connections, the platform numbers, and even the cost of the journey.
Question 4. Why is Pia worried about the arrival of her gift to her friend?
Hello, I'd like to send some flowers as a birthday gift, but I've left it rather late. It's my friend's birthday tomorrow. How soon could you deliver them to her?
It depends on where your friend lives. Up to 100 miles away, and the flowers could arrive today if you wish. Further than that, and the order will take up to a week to arrive.
Oh, that's fine. She only lives about 20 miles away, and I don't want them delivered until tomorrow. Hello, I'd like to send some flowers as a birthday gift, but I've left it rather late. It's my friend's birthday tomorrow. How soon could you deliver them to her?
It depends on where your friend lives. Up to 100 miles away, and the flowers could arrive today if you wish. Further than that, and the order will take up to a week to arrive.
Oh, that's fine. She only lives about 20 miles away, and I don't want them delivered until tomorrow.
Question 5. Juan leaves a message on his cousin's answering machine. What is the reason for the celebration?
We've arranged a family concert followed by lunch to celebrate our parents' wedding anniversary. It's on Saturday, September the 7th at 11 o'clock in the morning. Hope you can come. We've arranged a family concert followed by lunch to celebrate our parents' wedding anniversary. It's on Saturday, September the 7th at 11 o'clock in the morning. Hope you can come.
Question 6. Give the title and number of the recommended course book.
Hello, I want to register for an advanced level language course. I understand it starts next Wednesday. Can you give me some details of times, costs and course books, please?
Yes, they're all on this leaflet, and here's the book you'll need. It's called Prepare for Your IGCSE, and you can buy it in the college bookshop. The book number is 364-5679.
Hello, I want to register for an advanced level language course. I understand it starts next Wednesday. Can you give me some details of times, costs and course books, please?
Yes, they're all on this leaflet, and here's the book you'll need. It's called Prepare for Your IGCSE, and you can buy it in the college bookshop. The book number is 364-5679.
That is the last question of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with the manager of a mineral water company and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to the Black Mountains. I'm here to meet the director of a new mineral water company, Water for All. He's hit the news headlines because of his environmentally friendly attitude and creative ideas. Thomas Krenn, please tell us how you're helping the world to become both cleaner and greener.
Certainly. I grew up here in the Black Mountains to the sound of this clear, cold, rushing water. It was simply part of my life.
So that gave you the idea of supplying bottled water, and presumably your water comes from this region?
Yes. Its source is in these mountains. Plenty of people bottle water and sell it, but I decided to start a company with a difference. It would sell mineral water and, at the same time, help people in other lands to have access to fresh water.
How far have you been successful in your aim?
I started the company only 3 years ago with the purpose of funding clean water projects around the world. So far, we've been able to install pumps and sanitation systems in India and Mali.
Just by using some of the profits from the water bottle sales?
Yes, the profit from each bottle sold provides clean water for one person for 1 month.
It must be very satisfying for the customer to know that this purchase is helping someone else too.
That's the idea. Then I thought about it a bit more and reasoned that our company also needed to do something to make the actual drinking bottles environmentally friendly. 15 million plastic drinking water bottles were bought in one small country alone last year. Multiply that by lots of countries and consider the fact that plastic bottles do not decompose, and you realise the size of the world rubbish problem caused by bottled water alone. It seemed to me that by selling water in plastic bottles, we were helping the clean water problem, but at the same time contributing to the non-biodegradable waste problem.
So what did you do about it?
I invented the first fully biodegradable drink bottle. Hopefully other companies will follow this idea for their own packaging now. It's made entirely from corn.
Corn? You mean the crop that's used to make oil and bread?
Yes, and it decomposes in 12 weeks. Normal plastic bottles take centuries to rot, so just imagine the problems.
Excellent. So you help the environment as well as other people?
Yes. And I have another cleaning up project underway. I'm about to launch a rubbish muncher.
What's that? A type of robot, perhaps?
Well, it's simply a machine which will fit over any river and can gather and remove up to 45 tons of litter every year.
Very good. I look forward to seeing many rubbish munchers in place on the world's rivers. Thomas Krenn, thank you very much for your green and creative ideas, and every good wish for the future of your company.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello and welcome to the Black Mountains. I'm here to meet the director of a new mineral water company, Water for All. He's hit the news headlines because of his environmentally friendly attitude and creative ideas. Thomas Krenn, please tell us how you're helping the world to become both cleaner and greener.
Certainly. I grew up here in the Black Mountains to the sound of this clear, cold, rushing water. It was simply part of my life.
So that gave you the idea of supplying bottled water, and presumably your water comes from this region?
Yes. Its source is in these mountains. Plenty of people bottle water and sell it, but I decided to start a company with a difference. It would sell mineral water and, at the same time, help people in other lands to have access to fresh water.
How far have you been successful in your aim?
I started the company only 3 years ago with the purpose of funding clean water projects around the world. So far, we've been able to install pumps and sanitation systems in India and Mali.
Just by using some of the profits from the water bottle sales?
Yes, the profit from each bottle sold provides clean water for one person for 1 month.
It must be very satisfying for the customer to know that this purchase is helping someone else too.
That's the idea. Then I thought about it a bit more and reasoned that our company also needed to do something to make the actual drinking bottles environmentally friendly. 15 million plastic drinking water bottles were bought in one small country alone last year. Multiply that by lots of countries and consider the fact that plastic bottles do not decompose and you realise the size of the world rubbish problem caused by bottled water alone. It seemed to me that by selling water in plastic bottles, we were helping the clean water problem, but at the same time contributing to the non-biodegradable waste problem.
So what did you do about it?
I invented the first fully biodegradable drink bottle. Hopefully other companies will follow this idea for their own packaging now. It's made entirely from corn.
Corn? You mean the crop that's used to make oil and bread?
Yes, and it decomposes in 12 weeks. Normal plastic bottles take centuries to rot, so just imagine the problems.
Excellent. So you help the environment as well as other people?
Yes, and I have another cleaning up project underway. I'm about to launch a rubbish muncher.
What's that? A type of robot, perhaps?
Well, it's simply a machine which will fit over any river and can gather and remove up to 45 tonnes of litter every year.
Very good. I look forward to seeing many rubbish munchers in place on the world's rivers. Thomas Krenn, thank you very much for your green and creative ideas and every good wish for the future of your company.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about tea harvesting, and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to a tea plantation in Kericho, Western Kenya. Kericho is a bustling town in the cool highlands, 390 kilometres from Nairobi. It's the real home of tea, and I've come here to talk to a tea picker about his current situation. Mr. Matiko, could you tell us what's happening here?
Certainly. You've seen photos of us on your tea boxes and packages, people picking and carrying baskets of tea, haven't you?
Yes, always. In fact, that picture signifies that the tea is of a high quality. It means that it's hand-picked, doesn't it? I know that you pickers have taken care with the leaf selection, and so we enjoy the tea we drink.
Exactly. Now all that is under threat, as there's a plan that all tea will be picked by machine in future. All our jobs and livelihoods are under threat.
Tell us more.
The machines will pick faster than we can. We have 63,000 tea workers, and all our jobs will be gone if the machines take over the tea harvest. We have had family members working here since the 1920s, when tea farming began in these fields, 2,000 metres above the Great Rift Valley. Tea is our country's leading export.
And presumably tea companies are the main employers too.
Yes, tea production is very labour-intensive. Traditionally, we pick tea by hand and put it into huge baskets carried on the back. We pick about 50 kilos of tea a day.
And the machines?
They're managed by two workers only, and they're able to collect up to 1,300 kilos each day.
But surely the machines don't select leaves as you hand pickers do?
Of course not. And some tea producers realise this and know that the quality will disappear from their tea if they rely on machines. The machines make no choice about which leaf to pick. They just cut the whole lot down indiscriminately.
Surely that helps the tea picker's cause, then?
Yes, but a few manufacturers sell their tea as powder, not as leaves. They sell powdered instant tea at a lower cost and sacrifice the quality.
How terrible! That will mean no jobs for traditional hand tea pickers.
That's the problem. Our employment means that we can feed and educate our families. We have been trained in tea picking. That is our farming skill. So if it stops, we'll be left with nothing.
We can help you then, by only buying tea that is advertised as being picked by hand.
Yes, you can.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to a tea plantation in Kericho, Western Kenya. Kericho is a bustling town in the cool highlands, 390 kilometres from Nairobi. It's the real home of tea, and I've come here to talk to a tea picker about his current situation. Mr. Matiko, could you tell us what's happening here?
Certainly. You've seen photos of us on your tea boxes and packages, people picking and carrying baskets of tea, haven't you?
Yes, always. In fact, that picture signifies that the tea is of a high quality. It means that it's hand-picked, doesn't it? I know that you pickers have taken care with the leaf selection, and so we enjoy the tea we drink.
Exactly. Now all that is under threat, as there's a plan that all tea will be picked by machine in future. All our jobs and livelihoods are under threat.
Tell us more.
The machines will pick faster than we can. We have 63,000 tea workers, and all our jobs will be gone if the machines take over the tea harvest. We have had family members working here since the 1920s, when tea farming began in these fields, 2,000 metres above the Great Rift Valley. Tea is our country's leading export.
And presumably tea companies are the main employers too.
Yes, tea production is very labour-intensive. Traditionally, we pick tea by hand and put it into huge baskets carried on the back. We pick about 50 kilos of tea a day.
And the machines?
They're managed by two workers only, and they're able to collect up to 1,300 kilos each day.
But surely the machines don't select leaves as you hand pickers do?
Of course not. And some tea producers realise this and know that the quality will disappear from their tea if they rely on machines. The machines make no choice about which leaf to pick. They just cut the whole lot down indiscriminately.
Surely that helps the tea picker's cause, then?
Yes, but a few manufacturers sell their tea as powder, not as leaves. They sell powdered instant tea at a lower cost and sacrifice the quality.
How terrible! That will mean no jobs for traditional hand tea pickers.
That's the problem. Our employment means that we can feed and educate our families. We have been trained in tea picking. That is our farming skill. So if it stops, we'll be left with nothing.
We can help you then, by only buying tea that is advertised as being picked by hand.
Yes, you can.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment, you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following interview about the world's highest railway, and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening, and welcome to Our World, coming directly from the Kunlun Mountains on an historic occasion. The world's highest railway, running for 4,000 kilometres from the plateau of Tibet to Beijing, is complete and in working order. Here is Mr. Zhang to explain all this to us.
Welcome to not only the highest, but the most ambitious railway in the world. This has been made possible by 40,000 people working together and by overcoming some enormous engineering challenges. We engineers have completed 80 kilometres of tunnels and bridges, nearly all built higher than 3,800 metres above sea level.
This project must have taken you ages to build.
It was actually begun in 1950, and by 1984 the line had reached Gulmud in western Qinghai. We then thought of extending it further. However, at 6,500 metres above sea level, the Kunlun Mountains, plus the Tibetan Plateau, and the consistently high passes and permafrost grasslands would have made the job too difficult.
But you have triumphed, and now you've done all of this, and there are proposals to extend the railway line further to the Indian border, perhaps, or even across the Himalayas.
Yes, that is so. In 2001, it was decided to take up the challenge, and here we are. We completed it a year ahead of schedule. Technology has advanced so much in recent years that this has made our £2.3 billion project possible.
Will travellers on the railway feel ill at such high altitudes?
Our highest railway pass is at 5,200 metres, so yes, passengers could suffer from lack of oxygen. The train's manufacturer, a Canadian firm, has included double-paned windows with ultraviolet filters to reduce glare from the sun. They have also installed oxygen level regulators in the coaches, and these come into operation when the altitude changes. In fact, anyone feeling ill can breathe in oxygen-rich air at various locations in the train. We need all these health and safety measures. After all, the 4,000-kilometre journey from Beijing to Lhasa lasts 48 hours.
Oh, those precautions sound very good and should make it easier for people to travel on this route. But won't the use of this line damage the environment?
Much of the land on the Tibetan Plateau has frost under the surface and is particularly affected by global warming. To neutralise this, the railway relies on a system of metal posts half buried in the soil. These will channel heat to the surface to keep the track working in freezing conditions.
Are you all very excited by this new railway? Surely it will make travel and communication from what was once such a remote part of the world so much easier for you.
Yes, but on the other side, the whole world may flood in to visit us and could wreck our fragile culture. We have to strike a balance between modern technology and its advantages and our traditional way of life. The train drivers are often reminded of this when camels wander over the track. The area belonged to the animals before the railway came. But there are lovely moments on this journey. You can visit Tangu La, the highest station in the world. Or you can cross a great river on hundreds of kilometres of rail bridge.
Mr. Zhang, we wish you much success with the highest railway, the railway in the clouds. Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening, and welcome to Our World, coming directly from the Kunlun Mountains on an historic occasion. The world's highest railway, running for 4,000 kilometres from the plateau of Tibet to Beijing, is complete and in working order. Here is Mr. Zhang to explain all this to us.
Welcome to not only the highest, but the most ambitious railway in the world. This has been made possible by 40,000 people working together and by overcoming some enormous engineering challenges. We engineers have completed 80 kilometres of tunnels and bridges, nearly all built higher than 3,800 metres above sea level.
This project must have taken you ages to build.
It was actually begun in 1950, and by 1984 the line had reached Gulmud in western Qinghai. We then thought of extending it further. However, at 6,500 metres above sea level, the Kunlun Mountains, plus the Tibetan Plateau, and the consistently high passes and permafrost grasslands would have made the job too difficult.
But you have triumphed, and now you've done all of this, and there are proposals to extend the railway line further to the Indian border, perhaps, or even across the Himalayas.
Yes, that is so. In 2001, it was decided to take up the challenge, and here we are. We completed it a year ahead of schedule. Technology has advanced so much in recent years that this has made our £2.3 billion project possible.
Will travellers on the railway feel ill at such high altitudes?
Our highest railway pass is at 5,200 metres, so yes, passengers could suffer from lack of oxygen. The train's manufacturer, a Canadian firm, has included double-paned windows with ultraviolet filters to reduce glare from the sun. They have also installed oxygen level regulators in the coaches, and these come into operation when the altitude changes. In fact, anyone feeling ill can breathe in oxygen-rich air at various locations in the train. We need all these health and safety measures. After all, the 4,000-kilometre journey from Beijing to Lhasa lasts 48 hours.
Oh, those precautions sound very good and should make it easier for people to travel on this route. But won't the use of this line damage the environment?
Much of the land on the Tibetan Plateau has frost under the surface and is particularly affected by global warming. To neutralise this, the railway relies on a system of metal posts half buried in the soil. These will channel heat to the surface to keep the track working in freezing conditions.
Are you all very excited by this new railway? Surely it will make travel and communication from what was once such a remote part of the world so much easier for you.
Yes, but on the other side, the whole world may flood in to visit us and could wreck our fragile culture. We have to strike a balance between modern technology and its advantages and our traditional way of life. The train drivers are often reminded of this when camels wander over the track. The area belonged to the animals before the railway came. But there are lovely moments on this journey. You can visit Tangu La, the highest station in the world. Or you can cross a great river on hundreds of kilometres of rail bridge.
Mr. Zhang, we wish you much success with the highest railway, the railway in the clouds. Thank you.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment, you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about an art exhibit with a difference. Then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice.
Today, I am at one of the most famous art galleries in the world to tell you about an exhibition with a difference. This is not a wall of paintings or a room full of statues. This exhibit looks as if it has come straight from the fairground. It has sparkling, twisting tube slides, which are all interactive. The art gallery visitor can simply look at these two coils of stainless steel slides with their plastic transparent safety covers. Or even better, the visitor can become part of the exhibit itself by trying out the slides. The exhibit is housed in a huge hall used for temporary exhibitions. Watch out for the slides' arrival in your own country because, like most touring exhibitions, it will eventually travel the world. There are actually five slides which join up with the two main tubes. You can enter these two giant slides from any of the floors 1 to 5, according to how far you would like to travel. The 30-metre drop from the 5th floor of the gallery to the hall beneath takes less than 20 seconds. The ride gets faster and faster as the clothing of more and more participants polishes the stainless steel of the tubes. The downward slope of the slide is 30 degrees, so it's rather steep, but it's an unmissable experience. To open the exhibition, the director of the gallery had the first try at the giant slide, and he enjoyed it. He said that the slide would completely involve any visitor in its structure and atmosphere, just like any great work of art does. Indeed, the slide does make the visitor very conscious of the whole space of the big exhibition hall. This is seen from the edge of the slide whilst whooshing fast from ceiling to floor. It's all very safe. The parts of the slides were all imported and fitted by safety experts. There are no age restrictions for those wishing to have a go on the exhibit, but health and height restrictions do apply. The only alteration to the slide was made after the first few tests. Further safety mats were supplied because visitors were shooting quite far off the end of the shiny polished slide. Hans Holler, the slide's creator, has tried out slide building before. His most famous slide invention connected a fashion designer's office to her waiting car and driver. Holler insists that this exhibit is equally valid as a piece of art, whether the visitor just looks at it or rides in it. Visitors comment that it is like going to the fun fair, not like visiting an art gallery. Holler was commissioned to build the slide as part of a yearly series of large sculptures. This was launched in the year 2000, and this sculpture is the 7th in the series. Previous offerings include huge spiders and an enormous red trumpet. The exhibition is open daily and runs for a period of 6 months, so for a while, any visitor can experience all the fun of the fair.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Today, I am at one of the most famous art galleries in the world to tell you about an exhibition with a difference. This is not a wall of paintings or a room full of statues. This exhibit looks as if it has come straight from the fairground. It has sparkling, twisting tube slides, which are all interactive. The art gallery visitor can simply look at these two coils of stainless steel slides with their plastic transparent safety covers. Or even better, the visitor can become part of the exhibit itself by trying out the slides. The exhibit is housed in a huge hall used for temporary exhibitions. Watch out for the slides' arrival in your own country because, like most touring exhibitions, it will eventually travel the world. There are actually five slides, which join up with the two main tubes. You can enter these two giant slides from any of the floors, 1 to 5, according to how far you would like to travel. The 30-metre drop from the 5th floor of the gallery to the hall beneath takes less than 20 seconds. The ride gets faster and faster as the clothing of more and more participants polishes the stainless steel of the tubes. The downward slope of the slide is 30 degrees, so it's rather steep, but it's an unmissable experience. To open the exhibition, the director of the gallery had the first try at the giant slide, and he enjoyed it. He said that the slide would completely involve any visitor in its structure and atmosphere, just like any great work of art does. Indeed, the slide does make the visitor very conscious of the whole space of the big exhibition hall. This is seen from the edge of the slide whilst whooshing fast from ceiling to floor. It's all very safe. The parts of the slides were all imported and fitted by safety experts. There are no age restrictions for those wishing to have a go on the exhibit, but health and height restrictions do apply. The only alteration to the slide was made after the first few tests. Further safety mats were supplied because visitors were shooting quite far off the end of the shiny, polished slide. Hans Holler, the slide's creator, has tried out slide building before. His most famous slide invention connected a fashion designer's office to her waiting car and driver. Holler insists that this exhibit is equally valid as a piece of art, whether the visitor just looks at it or rides in it. Visitors comment that it is like going to the fun fair, not like visiting an art gallery. Holler was commissioned to build the slide as part of a yearly series of large sculptures. This was launched in the year 2000, and this sculpture is the 7th in the series. Previous offerings include huge spiders and an enormous red trumpet. The exhibition is open daily and runs for a period of 6 months, so for a while, any visitor can experience all the fun of the fair.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the recording and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.